Proverbs chapter 21 this evening. Proverbs chapter 21. Our text this evening is not alone. In fact, it's found almost word for word twice in the book of Proverbs. In fact, the second time, its only difference is that one word has been added, the word and. Otherwise, it was identical. And that is Proverbs 21 verse 9 and Proverbs 25 verse 24 are identical except for the addition of the word and. But there's also a third verse in Proverbs 21 verse 19 that is almost identical in the context, but with a little bit different words. And we're going to look at all three of them tonight, and hopefully they can be a help to us. Let's just read verses 9 and 19 of chapter 21. Alright, chapter 21 verse 9. It is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Verse 19. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Now, Richard Wardlaw, has got a great commentary on Proverbs. In my opinion, one of the best commentators on Proverbs you'll ever find. It is awesome. And it's old. I don't even know if it's in print anymore. I've got it on my Bible program, and it's really great. But he makes a statement. He's a little bit heavy in some of his comments, but what he says is so rich that it's worth repeating. He said, God said when he created Adam, it is not good that a man should be alone. In the first of these verses, he's talking about the three that we just alluded to, Solomon affirms that there are cases in which it is good for a man to be alone. These are cases in which the gracious design of a kind and benevolent God is counteracted by the evil passions which, through sin, become the heritage of our fallen nature. Now, all those fancy words, he's just saying that sometimes it is better to be alone. And this is what our verses are dealing with here tonight. As we look at these verses, I want to assure you, first of all, ladies, I want to assure you that wives are not the only ones that cause strife in a home. All right? He's picking on the wife tonight, but the wife is not the only one that causes strife in the home. Sometimes men can cause a lot of strife in a home. And so don't feel like it's a one-sided argument here. Husbands also can be argumentative. However, since Adam and Eve sinned in the garden, God ordained that the husband is to lead the home and that the wife is to be his submissive completer. And often that doesn't go over very well with the feminine gender. And yet that is what God has ordained. And that is why God addresses these verses to the women in the context of our passages tonight. And so, as we have done in the past, I want us to look first of all at some definitions and then the admonitions and the applications. And this is really, those are three ways that are really important for any time we study the Bible. You need to know the definition. If you don't know what you read, you're not going to be able to understand it. So you need to know the definitions. Then take a look at what is actually being said, the admonitions, what is he trying to tell me to do, and then some applications. How can I apply it to me? And that's what makes studying the scripture so helpful to us that we'll do this. First of all, let's look at some definitions. We find there in the first verse, it is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. The word dwell. The word dwell means to abide, to live, to remain, to sit. It has to just where you live, okay? So it's the word dwell, pretty basic one. The corner of the housetop was an interesting one. The word corner refers to a corner, just like we'd think of in a corner. But the corner of the housetop, it pictures a place of isolation. It pictures a place outside the comforts of the home. The housetop was in the Jewish community, was a flat roof. And we talked about this on Wednesday night a few weeks back when Elisha and his friends were building a new dormitory for their school prophets, and they would put brick or stone walls, and they'd lay beams across the top, close together, and then they'd put wood and or branches and brush and all that kind of stuff on top, and then pile dirt on top, but pack it all down to make it flat so the water would run off. And that was their flat roof of their houses. And some of them probably were a little bit more fancy than others, but that was a flat roof on the house. And they would often use the roof of the house for various purposes. And I looked up in Fred White's book called Manners and Customs of Bible Lands. And he gives us several uses of the rooftop, and I think are kind of interesting. He says, first of all, it was often used as a place to sleep, particularly in the summertime. It was warm. You go up and sleep on the rooftop. Nice place out in the breeze to be able to sleep at night. Then it was used as a place of storage. Remember in the story of Rahab and the spies? Where did they stay? They were up on the rooftop underneath some flax. She was storing flax on the rooftop, and they hid underneath the flax. So it was a place of storage. It was a gathering place in times of excitement. You know, when family or members or friends would come over, you know, they could go up on the rooftop and gather there and have a time where they can have an enjoyable fellowship time and excitement time. It was also used as a place for public proclamations, as you can imagine. You go up in your housetop and say, "Hey, neighbors, listen, I got some news." And, you know, you're up kind of on a podium or a pedestal, and you can kind of get across to the whole neighborhood. And you can get the news out that way. So it was used for a place of proclamation. And it was also used for a place of prayer and worship. Remember Peter, as the story we talked about tonight with Cornelius, before Peter went to see Cornelius, Peter was on the housetop praying at noontime. He was up there worshiping God and praying. And God spoke to him and told him he had a work for him to do. And so it was used for prayer and worship. It was also used as a way of escape in time of evil. I'm not sure I would have worded it quite that way. But in Matthew 24, when it talks about the coming judgment, God says, if you're on the rooftop, don't go back down to your house and collect anything. Just take off because you're in danger. All right, is basically what it's saying. And so he says, don't go back into the house. So they were on the rooftop. Now, Albert Barnes, in his commentary, reminds us that the corner of the housetop of such a roof top like this was exposed to all changes of the weather. And the point of the proverb lies in the thought that all of the winds and storms which a man might meet with there are more endurable than the tempest within. He said it's better to stay out there in the storms and the problems in the weather than to live down in that house with her. She's driving me crazy. All right? And so God says that there is a time that seems better. So we've looked at the corner of the housetop. Now let's take a look at the word brawling. The word brawling actually refers to quarrelsome person. Somebody that's quarreling, arguing, debating, full of strife, contention, always contradicting, always looking for a fight, that kind of a person. And such contentions can be very strong and difficult to break. Proverbs 18:19 says, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions, that's that word, their contentions are like the bars of a castle. He says, you get in a conflict with somebody, and it's really hard to break through that. It's like the bars of a castle. You can't get through them. It's hard because they're difficult. He also tells us in Proverbs 27:15 that it can be very irritating. He says, a continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. You know, you stop and think about it. If you were living in that house with a flat roof, I mean, they probably commonly had leaks. All right? With just a dirt roof on it, you can't expect it. If it's rained for 3 days, you're going to expect some rain to get kind of seeping down through in the drip. And you know, nothing more annoying. You're sitting there trying to eat your dinner or something and drip. No, gotta fix that drip. And it just constantly dripping, constantly irritating. And he says, and he compares that to the contentions of a woman. Now, the wide house. This was an eye-opener to me. The word wide doesn't mean wide like we would think of. It has to do with being shared. It has to do with sharing the house. It is a house that is shared. In this case, shared with the wife and family. And so, when you talk about it, the brawling woman in a wide house, it's a brawling woman in a shared house. It's better to be on the housetop all by yourself than in the with your, a brawling woman in a shared house with her. And you got all the accommodations of the house down below. So that describes verse number 9. Now let's take a look at verse number 19 and see some of the definitions there. The word dwell there, it's better to dwell. It's the same word as we saw before. It means to abide, to remain, to sit, to stay. The wilderness. The wilderness here is not necessarily, it could be, but it is not necessarily just some outback bushland with nothing but dust. All right? It isn't necessarily that kind of a wilderness, but it does refer to a pasture land or a paddock. It has the idea of any kind of a place that is uninhabited. So it's someplace out there where nobody lives. You know, it's out there with the animals. And it's uninhabited by humans. The word contentious, very interestingly, it's the same word as brawling. Same word. So a brawling woman, contentious woman, one who quarrels and causes strife. Then he talks, also he adds the idea of being angry. The word anger there is, as we know it, getting angry. It has to do with vexation, grief, or frustration. So, you can picture in your mind here, he's picturing a situation where a wife is constantly complaining, griping, causing discord, disharmony, and strife, and arguing, and fighting, and just an unpleasant situation. So the guy gets home from work, he's been out in his field working all day, and he gets home, and then she starts in, and he says, oh, not this again. And then the next day, it's the same thing, and the next day, it's the same thing, and the next day, it's the same thing. And that's what he's describing here for us. Now, secondly, I want us to notice the admonitions. What is he actually telling us? Well, it's pretty self-explanatory, but let's just look at it a little bit more closely. Solomon tells us what is better. Now, that's an important key, better. This is better. All right. Much of what Solomon said in this book was written to whom? It was written to his son. His son, listen. This is better. Now, if there's anybody that knew about women, Solomon should have known about women. He had more than his handful. All right. And he said, son, listen, it is better. This is better. This is better. Listen. Now, young men, it's important for us, whether you are very young or middle young, but if you're not married, listen up. This is important for you guys. All right? Do not ignore what Solomon says here. Why did God put this in the Bible? The main reason he put it in there is not for the poor husband that's got the complaining wife, but for the young man that isn't married yet, so he can think before he gets married. All right? That's why he put it in there. And he said that young men need to look beyond the young woman's smile and her beauty. So typically, you know, in our world today, some guy sees this girl. Oh, she knocked me over my head. She's so beautiful. Ooh. What's she like? I don't know, but she's beautiful. Is she going to be a good cook? I don't know. She'll cook at all, but she's beautiful. And I like her. And they don't think about the character side of it. They think about what she looks like and what she just turns me on. I'm excited. Wrong thing to look at. All right? And you need to inquire of her character at home, her character at school, her character among her friends, if you're going to consider her to be a wife. Very, very, very important. Look at her character. And you know, this has to be done before you see stars in your eyes. All right? Because what often happens is the guy comes along and he sees stars in his eyes. Oh, she's the one. She's the one. She's beautiful. And they don't even know her. They don't know what she's like. They haven't asked any questions about her. And they've already kind of fallen head over heels before they checked out what she was really like. Not a wise move. Not a wise move. And Solomon's saying, listen, son. Listen, it's far better to be by yourself, living on the rooftop, than with a brawling woman in a wide house and shared with a house with her. It's far better. So you need to pay attention. Wake up and think. Now, so basically he's saying here, a man is happier to live isolated on the corner of the housetop, enduring loneliness and heat and cold and rain and the insects, than to share a warm, sheltered house with a quarrelsome wife. It's better. Proverbs 19:13 says, "A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping." He emphasizes this a lot in the book of Proverbs. And I really don't think Solomon was intending just to be picking on the ladies. He was just saying, son, you need to watch. You need to wake up. You need to think. Think. Don't just fall for this woman because she's pretty and you like her and she looks so nice. Now, also, I do not believe that this verse gives the married man the right to move up to the roof if his wife is contentious. I don't think he was saying, you know, if she's been griping and complaining, you need to go sleep with the dog tonight. I don't think he was saying that. What he was saying, he was giving this warning to his son. And he was challenging both the husband and the wife to resolve these things, but he was also telling the son to be thinking before he gets involved in marriage. And a husband who has a contentious wife may be frustrated, but he must persevere as a loving leader, striving to make his wife a better woman for God's glory. Isn't that what Jesus said to do? He said we are to love our wives as Christ loved us. And then he goes on in the next few verses telling us exactly what Christ did to make us better. And he says that's what we need to do. And so that's really our duty. If that be the case that your wife is a brawling woman, then he says you've got a job ahead of you to work on her. But do it lovingly, as Christ did. It's a big project. Now, Proverbs 21:19. Look at 19. All right. We see some admonitions here. Again, Solomon is writing to warn the young men to be prudent when they're looking for a wife. And he says here, a man would be happier as a hermit in the uninhabited paddock than with a wife who is constantly stirring up strife and venting anger. He said, you'd be better off, son, if you never married and you lived out in the wilderness in a paddock all by yourself, lonely among the beasts. You'd be better off out there. You'd be happier out there than in a situation where you got to contend with that all the time. So he was giving him some warning and advice. The corner of the housetop is not sufficient distance for him to get away from her arguments and her anger. So he would rather be off in the solitudes of the wilderness with the wild animals. Now, once again, I want to read a bit of a lengthy paragraph here from Richard Wardlaw. Very thought-provoking comments. Listen carefully. He said, the wife that answers to the description before us violates at once the precepts of God's law and the spirit of his gospel as a plague where she ought to be a pleasure, as a curse where she ought to be a blessing, embittering the fountains of enjoyment where she ought to sweeten the springs of woe, converting into a scene of unceasing vexation and misery what ought to be a concentration of the richest delights of earth, throwing venomous and hissing snakes into the circle of love and peace and concord, of fond hearts and kind lips and beaming eyes, and making her wretched husband with a long to find a speedy escape from which ought to be the repose of his toils, the solace of his cares, the balm of his sorrows, the refreshment and strength and joy of his heart. Basically, he's just saying here that when this happens, the place of home ought to be a place of enjoyment, of peace, of comfort, of joy. And when it's not that, and there's turmoil and strife and bitterness and arguing and confrontation all the time, he said it takes that all away and robs it. Now let's take a look at some applications. The applications are the most important part. I've already made some of them, young men especially. This is for you. All right, this is for you young fellas. That is, you need to be prudent in your search for a godly wife. Some of you younger boys, you say, find a wife? So I'm not interested in a wife. Well, someday you will be. All right? And when that time comes, you need to keep these things in mind. And you need to examine her character before you fall in love. I can't emphasize that enough. And yet that's not the way it usually works. Because all of a sudden you see this woman and she's all that you've been dreaming for. Wow, she's just what I want. And you don't even know her. You don't know anything about her. I remember one preacher telling us young boys before I got married. He said, fellas, if you want to know about that girl you're thinking about, go meet her mom. And that's not always true, but there's a lot of truth in it. Because we pick up a lot from our parents. And he says in 30 years or 40 years, she'll be like her mom. And if you don't like what you see, then you better look somewhere else. And you know, that is, there's a lot of truth in that. But, I mean, it's not always, a fair judgment. The mom might not be a Christian and the daughter might be, but there's lots to learn from that. And then young women, I know we don't have any present with us tonight, but there may be some that will listen to this. The young women, you need to tend to be, if you tend to be an angry, quarrelsome type of a person, you need to beg God to cultivate a submissive and a quiet spirit in your heart and to help you to overcome that. Beg God to change you. It's so very important. Now, as we turn our attention to the couples, all right, husband, if you unknowingly married a contentious woman, then you need to beg God for patience and love and lovingly strive to help her to overcome that vice. That's a big task, but very, very, very important. Now, something to think about. If your wife was not contentious when you married her, but she's become contentious, consider the possibility that you may have contributed to her carnality. Your loving leadership may be lacking, causing her great frustration. There may be truths and her causing a truth in her, in your wife's nagging that you have failed to address. And it's frustrating her. You know, many a wife, they get exasperated because my husband won't fix anything around here. The tap's been dripping for 6 weeks and he won't fix it. And the door squeaks and I got this problem and that problem. And he doesn't do anything. And I'm trying to get him to listen to this and he won't do this. Or he won't lead. I want him to help, but he just goes and sits in the corner and watches television or reads the paper. He doesn't want to help with anything and help out with the kids and lead the place. And I got to lead, and it's difficult. And that exasperates them. That's not what God wants either. So sometimes, men, we can be the cause of our wife changing into a contentious woman. If that be the case, obviously we've got work to do. And before you can plug the leaks in your marital roof, you got to work on your own life. And that is so true. We've got to take the blame that comes our way. And then wives, if you have a sharp tongue and a short fuse, admit it. Admit it to God. Admit it to your husband. And beg God to help you change. Beg God to help you change. Do not be a complainer and a nag. Proverbs 9 verse 13 says, a foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing. We need to seek to edify and not to crucify. And practice Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. And then remember Proverbs 14:1, every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. And so tonight, as we look at these verses here, somewhat harsh, somewhat blunt, it's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a white house. You think, well, that's kind of straightforward. He doesn't give you any real cushion there. But it's to get our attention. And I believe that the primary reason for Solomon putting this in here was for his son. So it's the men, the young men, will think before you find a wife. And look carefully at her. And make sure. And you know, that's one of the things that frustrates me as a pastor I haven't married very many people, so I'm not saying this has necessarily happened. But young people will go to their pastor and say, oh, we want to get married. And you know, they've already made up their mind. They go to the pastor and say, all right, we're going to have counseling now. And if he tells them, no, I don't think you're fit for each other, they're going to say, Pastor, we love each other. We're all right. They're not going to listen because they've already made up their mind. They're in love. They're already making wedding plans. And then the pastor says, I don't think that the two of you are fit for each other. Oh, they're not going to listen. The preacher doesn't know. He's just out of touch. And then later on, they find out the preacher wasn't so out of touch after all. But we need to be careful. We need to be careful. Careful. And that's why I believe he's given us some wise advice here, to be careful. And as we've already looked at this, you know, that each of us have things we can learn from this. Arguing with strife produces stress and tension and will ruin relationships. It doesn't matter whether the arguing strife comes from the husband or the wife or the kids. It's always going to cause stress. And it's always going to harm great relationships. We need to keep it out of our homes. And rather than shifting the blame, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to take a look in the mirror and say, what do I need to work on? It's easy to say, if she would just stop that, or if he would be better at that, then, no, what we need to do is look in the mirror and say, what have I done to contribute to this? Yes, maybe my spouse has been wrong. Maybe they haven't been right. Maybe they've been doing things they shouldn't do. But what have I done to contribute to that? What have I done to cause them to want to be that way? What am I doing? What do I need to work on? And take a look in God's mirror and ask God to help us to find the things that we need to work on and then work at fixing them so that they will be able to see the problem resolved. And you know, these vices did not fix themselves. These don't go away by themselves. Any sooner than you can say, well, the roof's been leaking for 6 weeks now, and it just won't stop leaking. And it won't stop leaking until somebody fixes it. And the same thing is true in a home. If your roof is leaking at home, it's not going to stop leaking until somebody does something to fix it. And that's why each of us need to take a look in the mirror and say, what have I done to poke holes in the roof to make it leak? What can I do to stop the leak? And how can I work at fixing it? And we need to work at it ourselves. Work at each of our own issues to be able to help resolve the problem. And it takes effort and it takes work. No question about it. And the longer you let it leak, the more work it's going to take to get it fixed. That's true in reality and it's true in a home. You know, you let a home go for weeks and weeks or months and years and let it leak and leak and leak and it's going to do tons of damage. It's going to have to be repaired. It's going to be hard to fix. But if you fix it right away, it can solve the problem. So the sooner you get at it, the better. And young people, be sure to cultivate good relationships and good friendships and good character in your own heart. Cultivate that good character so that you can be what God wants you to be. And then you'll have wisdom in looking for one as a spouse who will also have godly good character. So as you look at these verses here tonight, have a read of them again, think about them. But as I said, I don't think that God is telling us that, you know, if you have a squabbling wife run away and go hide on the roof or take a hike out in the desert and live there for a while. No, I don't think he's telling us that. He's just saying it might be more peaceful out there, but that's not the solution. That's not the solution.